Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. My guest today, Mike Dooley, is a passionate advocate of living deliberately and creating consciously. A popular speaker, teacher, and author of inspirational books emphasizing spiritual accountability, Mike Dooley is perhaps best known for his free Notes from the Universe emailings and his New York Times bestsellers, Infinite Possibilities, The Art of Living Your Dreams, and Leveraging the Universe, Seven Steps to Engaging Life's Magic. A featured teacher in both the book and the movie versions of The Secret, Mike Dooley lives his dreams, traveling internationally, speaking on life, dreams, and happiness, and offering answers to many of the provocative questions that plague so many spiritual seekers about life, death, the powers of the mind, time, space, heaven, hell, UFOs, ESP, reincarnation, and more. Mike Dooley joins me now to share his own life journey and some of his insights on how we can all create the life of our dreams by living deliberately and creating consciously. Mike Dooley, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. Great to be with you.
Mike, you grew up questioning what life is about, and you say that you always felt different, as if everyone knew things that you did not. You always needed explanations that made sense and that you believed that were attainable. At what age did you become aware of this intense curiosity about life, the universe, and all of those big questions?
You know, I think it was probably 12, 13, 14 at the very latest, but 12 or 13, when I can, the two questions I remember, you know, tossing my mother's way was, you know, how could there be a devil or hell? Wouldn't God be big enough to understand? Now, these were not my exact words, but big enough to understand that, you know, that some people, some kids, you know, like my age at the time, you know, they didn't have good parents. They might not have had parents at all, maybe guardians or people who were not having their best interests in mind, maybe who abused them. You know, they would therefore end up making some pretty horrible choices, and it wouldn't be because they wanted to be evil. They just knew no other way to behave than what they were shown, and wouldn't God understand that? And thinking that line of thought, even then, it was like, okay, so maybe it's not a horrific abuse case, but through the example of a horrific abuse case, we could say, okay, there ought to be lenience. Well, even in a mild abuse case, or in any case where a human being erred against another, so to speak, it would only and always be because of some ignorance, some part of a lack of recognition that, you know, what you do to one, you do to yourself, you do to everybody. It doesn't take much of a leap to see that if you've somehow, and I don't know how or why I was able to do this, create the space for kind of inner contemplation. And similarly, I would tell my mother, you know, that there couldn't be anything that's not God, because what would it be made of? I mean, it seems like ridiculously simple deductive reasoning, but I hold to it firmly today. I mean, there has to be intelligence, and whether you call it God or not, I really don't care. But life cannot possibly be random chance. You know, we evolved from amoebas for some fortuitous reason. It's patently insane. And so you see that there must be order when you look at the beauty, when you look at 100 million species on this planet, when you look at the symbiotic relationships, when you look at the one thing that baffles scientists the most. How does it all work so well? There's order, an unseen order. And that stems to an intelligence that is just beyond comprehension. And that would be the source of all things. And how could anything not be of that source? You know, where did it come up? Where did it creep into, an inanimate universe? Matter does not create spirit. And further, to the studious curiosity shopper, the opposite is the case. Matter is given rise through spirit, a.k.a. our thoughts, which become the things and events of our lives. And so those were two main channels of thought that I would toss my mom's way. And I remember the age because I remember where we lived at the time in the living room I was asking her the questions in. And so you can't explain why I was wondering such things. Just, you know, maybe a gift.
That's quite a recognition for a young lad. How much of your quest in nature do you think you inherited from your mother? Because she seems to have played a pivotal role in your awakening, providing just the right books at just the right time on your journey.
That was the case. And interestingly, though, not to take anything away from her, she was, you know, my number one my entire life and super close and on the phone every day. And I thought I'd never survive her demise, but because of dementia and Alzheimer's, it was a long, painful goodbye. And I think that was a gift of hers to me and to her kids who loved her equally. It made it bearable that we could say goodbye. And with that said, she wasn't particularly enlightened, and she was not particularly a person to ask these questions, though she, being an avid reader, was able to, given my curious mind that she knew well of, she could route me books as when I was a young adult that blew her mind, and she knew they would blow my mind. And these books included The Seth Material by the late Jane Roberts, just some of the most profound stuff on the nature of reality to this day in print. Clearly no agenda, clearly a benign, benevolent source, whatever it is, this Seth. And so Mom was kind of discovering this stuff with us kids and kind of shepherding us, not through wisdom, but because of her voracious appetite to read and obviously somewhat of an open mind, she grabbed this stuff and chucked it our way. And most of the stuff, well, I'd say half the stuff confirmed my own little inner suspicions about reality. And the other half was stuff way beyond what I could have deduced or figured out on my own. But it really, truly set me in motion with a conviction that all things relevant to my happiness, and this is what I teach, are knowable. And this is all anybody needs to know. We don't have to be quantum physicists. We don't have to, be yogis in meditation. You just have to ask some questions, some tough questions, and realize that you ask the question, the answer is within reach. Who am I? How did I get here? What can I do with my life, and how can I do it? These are simple baby questions with simple baby answers that are enough to live a rocking, joyful life in health, abundance, surrounded by friends, and all good things. That's the nature of reality. That's why we chose to come here. And this is what I do now as I teach. I teach people to get to these answers and then to use and leverage these answers for the best of their life.
Many of the books that you list as having been influential on your journey, you know, I'm sure many of us have read them. I know I certainly have. Mm-hmm. You know, Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz, The Inner Game of Tennis, yeah. Jose Silva, The Silver Method of Mind Control, and Bridie Murphy, which was a fascinating book that I read at a very young age and really blew mm-hmm. my mind at the time. One of the things I'm curious about is I see that you get described as a reality theorist. What does that term actually mean?
You know, the first time I saw that used to describe me, I had to go look it up. And my recollection is that it followed pretty much what you would expect a reality theorist to be, and that is one who postulates theories or a theory on what the heck is going on. What is consciousness? Who are we? Why are we here? But I'd like to interject that something that's fundamental to my worldview and what I teach, and this may sound abrasive at first, but in three sentences more, I'll fix it. I am so not in alignment with anyone who thinks we all have our own truths. Everybody's entitled to their own truths. Baloney, hogwash, there goes all of your power. Total delusion, not a hope to stand on. There is a truth, a single absolute truth with regard to the nature and the logistics of our reality. It is benign, it is empowering, it is simple, it is in our DNA, and there are no other truths. And this is what makes it possible for there to be a stage for all of us to have certain things in common, like gravity and the physical laws, an arena, if you will, so that we can get on with our very subjective lives. The stage must be objective. And to patch that up, everyone is entitled to great respect for their own journey to the truth. But there are not different truths per culture, per religion, per person. Again, thinking that, well, there's positive thinking, and that will help me live a better life. And then there's ancient spiritual contracts that I completely forget entering. And, of course, there's karma. And then there's debt, spiritual debt. And then there is a God who picks and chooses amongst those who are most deserving. And, of course, prayer factors in there, and so does the occasional angel. I mean, if you invest a little bit in all of these camps that do speak to aspects of truth, but do not contain a fundamental grounding, you give away your power. I mean, you might have a dream today for meeting your life partner in the immediate future, but hey, what if there's bad karma? You know, hey, what if God thinks you're not ready for another 12 years? You know, it's like, how can you have any confidence?
They are great questions to lead us into the break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with best-selling author, speaker, and co-founder of Tucked.com, Mike Dooley, about the many topics covered in his books. We'll be back in a few moments.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Mike Dooley, you posed some great questions just before the break that I would like to revisit a little later. But first, I'd like to hear a little bit more about your journey, because despite this incredible question in mind and all the reading that you did, you went to college, and you, after college, embarked on a fairly traditional, very successful career as an international tax consultant, and then turned your back on it to become an entrepreneur. Why?
Well, in my search for answers from my teenage years throughout college, I guess I ended up having kind of a primary motive for looking for these answers, and that was to live a totally awesome life. You know, I wanted to be rich financially. You know, as a kid, that's maybe, as an adult, maybe that's potentially shallow. But when you're a kid and you're growing up and you have a competitive nature and you know it's possible and you have a great appetite for adventure, then you don't have to see that in a shallow light. And I didn't. I also wanted love. I wanted to be healthy, to live to my potential, to be fulfilled, to be creative. And to me, the absolute number one key to achieving all of those dreams would be to understand what the heck's going on here. Why are we here? I was deep into questions about God. I was raised a Catholic, so I didn't just ask, why am I here? What's going on? I'm just like, wait a minute, what is this stuff the church is saying? Because, presumably they've got a lock on the truth. I got to get in there. So I was like a devout Catholic as a child because I didn't want to go to hell, and I was really motivated by, what the church was saying, although I found it confusing and contradictory. And so as I broke away from those lines of thought, it was only because I asked a lot of questions in that arena as I was outside of that arena, and it was with the motivation of living an amazing, selfishly, an amazing life. Nobody was going to live my life for me, and I wasn't born of wealthy parents. And so, with the truth in hand, by the time I finished my college years, the truth being that we are all divine creators, that our thoughts become things, that our words give us wings, that if we take action, baby steps, we will meet with serendipities and so-called accidents and coincidences in alignment with our dreams and visions that will radically transform our lives for the better, so long as we're preoccupied with the life of our dreams and not preoccupied with what we don't like about our lives, because we get what we think about, whatever it is. And so that was my ambition, is like I want to live a life like everyone but be wildly successful. So that didn't exempt me from choosing careers or colleges. And so with my accounting degree, I went to work with today's PricewaterhouseCoopers, became a certified public accountant, and then got into the tax department and traveled to New York, then Saudi Arabia, Cairo, Egypt, Boston, Massachusetts. And after 6 years, was really, this is not who I am, as much respect as I had for the firm. So I resigned at the point of being promoted to manager, which is a huge milestone in public accountancy. And from then, it was like, okay, now what do I do to play these cards of wisdom? Because I wasn't breaking through, nor can you really, in a structured environment like Pricewaterhouse. But foreign assignments and other things kept me there. So I broke out to become an entrepreneur where the sky would be the limit, and ended up selling T-shirts with my brother and mother for the following decade. We sold over 1 million each. And the three of us sold 1 million cumulatively, which was quite successful. I mean, there's wildly more successful people than three people who sell 1 million T-shirts. But that made us, we did well. That's $10 million between three people for 10 years. And at that point, the trends were declining. And what had happened was, my brother's an artist, graphic designer, extraordinaire, and we found the best-selling T-shirts and eventually other gifts were those with little poems on them about dreams coming true, the power of our thoughts, believing in yourself. And I was the writer of all of our T-shirts and gifts for 10 years. So his art, my writings, and when we wound down 17 years ago, I was at the age of 40, didn't know what direction to go in, and I thought, you know, this is really cool, this internet thing, and these emails that I can send to people who visited our retail outlets, and I'm going to send out a little bit of motivation every Monday. And that turned into every day of the week, and that turned into Notes from the Universe, and today's 730,000+ subscribers, and it's turned into 14 books, 2 New York Times bestsellers, DVDs, video courses, world tours. I'm presently on my 4th world tour, and really the life of my dreams. A wife, a first-time dad as of 3 years ago, and I'm not trying to brag. I am trying to say that, you know, this stuff works, and it explains every success and every failure. It explains, and it's not my origins. I mean, the truth is there, and from it we can find comfort, inspiration, salvation, second chances galore, and do what we came here to do, live happy lives.
Let's explore some of your books and the topics covered in them. And of course, the very first one was Infinite Possibilities, The Art of Living Your Dreams, which started as an audio program and has since become a perennial bestseller. What inspired you to create that program, that audio, and write that book?
Well, at the time, we had just liquidated what remained of the T-shirt company. I had enough money to coast for just a couple of years, and I was really worried about what was going to come next. And earlier in my life, I had attempted writing a book that really was quite poor and very Spartan. And at the time that I started sending out the emails, about 16 years ago, 1 year into it, I was frantically looking for how to monetize my free emails. And I asked a professional speaker how he got started in speaking. He then invited me to be a joint venture partner in an audio program that would be a subscription, 1 hour per month for a year. He told me everything to do. I thought it was a bit salesy, but we offered a money-back guarantee. So we launched and pre-sold it before recording one word. I sold $5,000 worth. He sold none. I didn't believe him. He didn't believe me. And then he bailed. And I had already titled it. He bailed because he didn't feel worthy of splitting the money with me. And he was a born-again Christian, and he thought my ideas were a bit too kooky. So it seemed horrific at the time, but then almost simultaneously exciting, because I thought, you know, I don't need a partner. It was my title, Infinite Possibilities, The Art of Living Your Dreams. I can resurrect that old book that never took wings. I can beef it up with what I've learned through giving speeches at Toastmasters clubs and Rotary clubs at the time. And I can use this as a platform for sharing the truth about the power of our thoughts, the importance of belief alignment, using your intuitions, your emotions, understanding your relationships. It was just like, oh my God, this is the perfect thing for me. And so I tried to get it published as a book as I was recording the audio program, but nobody would have it. And so I went on to sell hundreds of thousands of copies, and it's probably better they didn't take it as a book, because the audio program was much more profitable. And by the time I was invited to be in the book and DVD The Secret as a contributor, because it's the exact same topic, you know, the law of attraction, blah, 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 Simon & Schuster became interested in publishing Infinite Possibilities, and that, my first major book, debuted at number 7 on the New York Times bestseller list. And it was, by that stage, it had been out for years as an audio program, so it was a matter of just converting the script of the audio into a book and polishing it up. And Bob's your uncle, as they say in the UK.
They do indeed. And he was. I did have an uncle Bob, so it's quite true. On your website, your book, Leveraging the Universe, 7 Steps to Engage in Life's Magic, I think it's that book. You say that knowing about the universe and its magic is not enough to manifest change, that's a bit like knowing exactly where the secret treasure is buried, yet never bother in to dig. Instead, the trick lies in knowing the difference between what one can, should and must do versus what one can, should and must delegate to an all-wise and capable universe. Say a bit more about that.
Mm-hmm. That came out at around the time of The Secret. When I first started creating that material, The Secret, the DVD was out and the book was just published. And I was embarking on I think that was the basis of my second world tour. And what I most wanted to impart was what people were misunderstanding in The Secret, and that is the action component. It is all important, even though our thoughts literally become things. They do so when we show up in the world. They don't manifest spontaneously in the palm of our hand, not yet at least. So we have to take physical action, yet some people were not seeing what I thought was the obvious in our message of The Secret, that you know, you must continue living your life, going out there. The Secret and the Law of Attraction is not an excuse to quit your job and wait for Oprah to call. It's like, get out wherever you are, knock on doors, turn over stones, go back to school, network, press the flesh, ask for help, attend trade fairs, interview, ask for a raise, start a business. When these action steps are taken in conjunction with vision boards and affirmations, then there's as if spontaneous combustion doesn't happen instantaneously, but eventually, all of a sudden, even though you started out on some dusty dirt road, metaphorically, in your career or ambitions with self-doubt and confusion, you wake up one morning and you are literally on the yellow brick road living a fairy tale life, which is exactly what happened to me, irregardless of my appearance in The Secret, because that was all, you know, donated time, as was true for all the contributors who were in The Secret. I was already on an earlier world tour, already selling the heck out of my audio program, already holding audiences around the world.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with internationally best-selling author and creator of the highly popular Notes from the Universe, Mike Dooley, about life, love, consciousness, and many things beyond. We'll be back with more after this break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Mike Dooley, your book, Life on Earth, takes the form of a journal in which you ask what's on your mind during pivotal times in your life. And what comes out of that are many answers to questions that we all like to play with. I'd like to concentrate on just a couple of those. You have a chapter called Show Me the Money. Money seems to be a universal focus and a problem for many, many people. What do you offer in that chapter that can really help people? Because so many people have talked about money and many people are still in exactly the same place.
Well, I first clear up some misconceptions about money, because there could be no greater block to anyone in their path to moving towards a life of abundance and luxury than an inner hidden belief that money is the root of all evil, or that money is hard to get, or even the light one that money is not spiritual. And so I first wanted to dispel, through the answers that I got in my own journaling and now with a lifetime under my belt at age 56, I wanted to dispel those crazy, sad, power-robbing beliefs that I know that religion, at least mine at the time, I'm no longer of any religion, puts over on people. And then just the notions of the times, you know, whether it was religion or otherwise, too often a sense of desire for materiality or material things is frowned upon, which is crazy. We are material things during our lifetimes on earth, as well as spiritual things, but to all of a sudden think that all material things are bad and only ethereal things are good is nutty, to be kind. And so there's a lot of dispelling, belief busting, I call it, that I work through in that chapter. And then I talk about 21 steps to opening the floodgates of abundance, 21 steps that literally reflect and reveal exactly what I've done to move my life long ago into a place where I could afford to live on my terms, without stress, without worry, without guilt, etc. And some of those things are, you know, are and were very, you know, common. Dream, define your desired end results, your desired abundant lifestyle. Define what you want in terms of the end. Do not define how to get there. That was also a tangent to the last question you asked me about what I had meant in that passage where I talk about leveraging to the universe, knowing what to leverage and what not to leverage, what to do and what not to do. One thing when it comes to money, and in a greater sense, all things, when you want change or transformation, do not worry about how you are going to get there. The hows are the domain of divine intelligence, just like GPS navigation. You don't know how to get to Aunt Sally's house if you've never been there before, or to your next dinner date if it's in a town you've never been to before, but no problem. GPS navigation knows where you are at all points, and you simply put into the system not the hows, that's what we're looking for. We put into the system the end, the destination. And from that point forward in your car's journey, the system works backwards from the end to where you now are. It calculates, therefore, every left and right hand turn, speed limits, merges, all possible ways to get to that destination, and it knows in an instant the shortest, quickest, happiest way. The end result in GPS navigation in your car forces and dictates the hows. And we don't know the hows. We never know. And the car doesn't start talking to us until we put it in gear, which is a second step. So you must have a dream in terms of the end and then do something about it, even though as you put your car in gear, you don't know how you're going to get there. In life, in financial terms, you know, dream big, dream of abundance, dream of a lifestyle of the rich and famous or whatever you want, in addition to pursuing love, in addition to pursuing to living in service, in addition to balance and harmony and all the other things that we naturally are also drawn to. So in addition to all those things, you would define your lifestyle as you see it, living in what kind of house, living in what part of the world, what part of the country, with what kind of financial freedom, you know, unlimited freedom, freedom to travel where and when you want, freedom to be able to book hotels and restaurants with your family on the fly, make a list, I recommend to people, of the things you'd want in your dreamed of lifestyle as if it already existed. Do not think about how you will get there. That comes later in the equation. Yes, there will be a how, but our brains were not designed to know what those hows are when there's 7.5 billion co-creators all changing their mind so often on the fly. The universe, divine intelligence, can figure out the hows. You just sit tight on the end, the destination, and then car and gear, you show up. You try this, you try that, you try the other. You're trying out different hows, so to speak, but you're never attaching to or insisting, this is how my dream will come true because the universe loves me and there's a law of attraction. It's like, no, it might not be how. Chances are great. Whatever hows you think will be used won't be the actual how through which you arrive. But because you were in gear, because you were taking action, because you started a business, you went back to school, you asked for help, you networked, you asked for a raise, you considered your strengths and your gifts, and you considered what you'd like to pursue, then the universe will have ample opportunity to pick from the possible paths that you're sampling to reveal a concrete journey for you that will deliver you to a physical world that resembles what you had earlier been thinking about. This is how all lives unfold. Thoughts become things through a metamorphosis of time and action and dreams. And so I give more tips like that. You know, take action, get started, dream, get a little logical. I'm just looking at the book right now. For some of the 21 steps to help open up the floodgates of financial abundance in one's life.
Life on Earth covers a whole gamut of topics, from aliens, ETs, UFOs, to ancient civilizations, secret societies, what happened to both. I think one of the great questions people have is, why do bad things happen to good people? And you have a chapter on contextualizing abuse, violations, accidents, and disasters. I think it's important to share a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, that is one of the things that upsets the cart a whole lot. And there are many people who would otherwise be in alignment with the secret and or my teachings, and or there's so many other people throughout history who have taught the truth exactly as I'm teaching it. And they would say that the problem they have with this kind of thinking is they ask, aren't you, Mike Dooley, therefore blaming the victim of any and every atrocity committed upon him or her? And it is such an unfair, unreasonable accusation, yet it's hard to answer it in a nutshell or just a little, you know, few words. You know, you're not going to put a happy face on pain and suffering, you know, ever. You might try to explain it like a doctor explains AIDS. Is the doctor justifying AIDS? Of course not. And let me first speak to answering a question like that. One must have the courage to be able to accept or consider possibilities beyond what the physical senses show. Just because we see no order, just because we see the ugly, doesn't mean that there wasn't something positive being accomplished. And to put it in their terms, the person who thinks I'm blaming victims, the person who believes that there's a God out there in the world, you know, how would they explain it? That God made a mistake and so there was this violation? Or they, instead they explain it as, you know, well, no, it was the devil, not God. But then again, how could there be anything that's not God? So that explanation doesn't really help at all. I help people consider that we are timeless, eternal beings with an awareness that preceded into eternity before our life began and after our life began, and that while we can't see the meaning in ugly things happening in time and space, we can nevertheless deduce that there must be order in this bastion of perfection of the creation of divine intelligence, aka God. And that order might take on the form of something like a person being in harm's way, so that others wouldn't have to be. This person wouldn't be a victim, they'd be a hero. It might take on the form of being in harm's way, so that they might be part of the spark, part of the solution for someone who's so confused they've resorted to violence, regretting through their own acts what they've done, and finally waking up to the folly of their ways, the folly of a life lived through aggression and anger. Those are two very general attempts. I get more specific in the book, as you know, to say, hey, there may be order when you don't see it, and maybe instead of calling people victims, they are heroes going where others feared to go for reasons that made sense given their eternal nature. And again, that doesn't put a smiley face on anything. That doesn't justify abuse or pain or suffering, all of which are real. But to believe in victims, or to believe in blame, or to believe in fault, takes out of context the true nature of our eternal journeys, and it takes away from the people who are living the lives that are being pointed at in these examples, from the realization that they are powerful. If you believe that random bad crap can happen to anybody, then it will happen to anybody, and it will happen to you, because this is the power of our beliefs. And if you feel vulnerable and you daydream vulnerable thoughts, then this would be the order that would bring such to bear in your life. Whereas, if you could take a person who's been through some kind of trauma and not talk about blame or fault, not that you wouldn't press charges on the perpetrator, that's another story, absolutely. But instead of painting them in a description of being powerless and a victim, and oh my gosh, if it wasn't you, it would have been me, and as if it was all pointless and meaningless, then you're setting them up for another fall. Instead, what I tell people who have been through horrible things or painful things or the loss of a loved one, don't even try to understand or explain what you've been through. Instead, try to understand and explain the nature of reality and use that as a leverage for traction to move forward from this point in your life. One day you can look back over your shoulder, perhaps with a lot more clarity, much more objective, and you'll be able to dissect and understand and see the order in what had transpired in your life. But to do that when you're writhing in pain just extenuates that pain. And to do that while thinking that you are a victim sets you up to continue living in a world where there are, quote-unquote, believed-in victims. And so it's a long conversation, not one that can be satisfied in a sound bite. Fortunately, I've had the chance to get this book out there, as well as other books of mine that speak to such complex things as bad things happening to good people, and to put them in another light, and to again say, none of my views here, none of what I've written, ever justifies abuse, nor does it negate it, nor does it deny it. It just puts it in a new context from which the person who encountered the trauma can rebuild their life quicker, better, happier, and from which there can then be a rehabilitation of the violators, including the possibility of incarceration and whatever else society has set up for such situations.
I'm going to hold you there, Mike. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest is best-selling author, co-founder of Tuck.com, and creator of the Notes from the Universe e-mailing, Mike Dooley. We'll be back with more after the break.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching, Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatePR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hi everyone, this is Shay Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shay Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Mike Dooley, what does it mean to you to be spiritually accountable?
It means taking responsibility for yourself, which at first seems daunting and absolutely overwhelming, particularly given we live in a world that truly does believe that random bad stuff can happen to good people. But as I was saying earlier in the last segment, that if you can step up to the plate and not explain the hard times in your life other than, hey, I don't know how, why, or what I did to create that mess, but I know I had some role at a higher spiritual level and letting it happen. And now, instead of giving your power away, you have kind of risen to a new level, a new orbit, from which you will be far less likely, depending on your other beliefs, of going through any such trauma similar to what you've already been through, and you will be off that loop, no more repeating circumstances and behaviors and getting repeating outcomes that weren't pleasing you before. That's taking responsibility, you know, realizing that you're powerful. And another thing that makes it easier to accept full responsibility for your life, because again, you don't have to explain all the junk that's happened, you just have to use it going forward, is realizing you're not alone, that you are far more than you've ever been taught, far more than you can possibly realize, that you are literally, and this is why I have 14 books, because I can build this case, you are literally the eyes and the ears of God Almighty come alive in the dream of life. You are capable of doing whatever it is you want to do, including moving beyond any fear or out of any circumstances that you wish to extract yourself from, as well as living the life of your wildest dreams. And I believe that is our real work, I should say our real play, why we chose to be here, because we knew how good it could be, we knew how good it could get, and we knew the challenge involved would ask that we rely on ourselves instead of relying on the church or the culture or our partner or somebody or something else. Not that you can't enjoy all of those support systems. I do. Not all of them, but my wife, my family. But then by relying on yourself, given your supernatural powers, given that you can make anything happen through imagination and action, as they used to say where I went to school, thy will shall be done. That's spiritual accountability.
It is. Tell me about the two new books you've got coming out.
Uh-huh. Well, I've got a brand new book launching on May 9th this year called From Deep Space with Love, a conversation on consciousness, reality,
universe.
And of the universe and building a better world. Indeed, thank you for that. I'm looking.
Because you wrote that with someone else, and it's about the work that she has been channeling.
That's right. Tracy Farquhar is my co-author in this book. She is a professional psychic, and she started receiving, if you will, information, having an urge to express the ideas that were coming from a source other than her normal consciousness. And it's turned out that she's channeling a collective of eight beings from another planet in our physical universe. So it's not channeling from the spirit realm, which was the case with the Seth material or the Abraham material or Ramtha or Richard Bach's Jonathan Livingston Siegel. In this case, she is channeling conscious, awake beings from the same physical system, the same time, if you will, as us, except they are very far removed. I think the number is 5.6 billion light years into deep space. And the long and the short of it is they nearly destroyed their planet a millennia ago through some of the poor choices that we have tended to make the last couple of hundred years, you know, violating the planet, abusing the planet, pollution, etc., depletion of resources, to a point where their systems collapsed, making room for new systems, better systems. Collapses aren't the end of the rope, the end of the line necessarily. And now they're living a utopian revival that came about far quicker than any of them could have imagined, according to them. And given their true sophistication with consciousness, which is no different than true sophistication with technology. Look at us today compared to where human beings were 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago. Any beings, this planet or another, conscious creators such as humans, would be expected to greatly evolve. I am sure, Sandy, 1,000 years from today, we human beings will be far more technologically sophisticated than we are today. No one would dispute that, so long as we don't destroy ourselves in the process. And we would be far more sophisticated in terms of understanding consciousness and reality 1,000 years from today. I mean, there are psychics today who are doing remote viewing, who are channeling. There are yogis finding all kinds of benefits to health, recovery, and healing through advanced states of meditation. 1,000 years from now, these conscious pioneers will be in a totally different place than we are now. And so is this the case, so would it naturally be the case for beings on other planets? I mean, no one could rightly think we're the only consciousness in the entire universe where there are trillions times billions of planets, and not only are we the only ones, but I would say it's very safe to say some are more sophisticated, some are less. These are more sophisticated when it comes to consciousness and projecting their consciousness, as some earthlings do, to, in this case, Tracy Farquhar. The short of it is, I ask Frank, the name of the collective is Frank, questions throughout 55,000-word hardback book about the nature of reality, about planet Earth, about their planet, about their systems, their failed ones, their new ones, about what we're doing and what we could do better, and ultimately how to build a better world. And it is exciting stuff. I can't wait for May 9th when this book debuts, From Deep Space with Love.
Mike, we're almost out of time. I have one final question for you. You've lived your dreams. You've traveled extensively. You finally got married a few years ago, and you've become a dad for the first time. Do you feel at this point in your life that you've found the answers to all the questions that spurred you on your journey as a youth?
Oh, yes, and so much more. But having said that, no one knows better than myself that I know very, very, very little about very, very, very much. But yet, one of the points I make in Life on Earth and in all of my works is that it takes so little to know who you are, how you got here, and what you can do with your life on Earth. Granted, there will always be unanswered questions when you operate from the space of a tiny human brain. But those things that you can't or that we can't comprehend, like parallel dimensions, et cetera, are irrelevant to the choices that led us to choose to live this lifetime in power, in grace, loved. In love and loved. So I've got what I wanted. I've got enough. I'll always be asking more questions, but they're besides the point of my happiness.
And writing more books. Mike Dooley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great pleasure and honor, Sandy. Thank you.
Thank you. You can find out more about Mike Dooley's work and books, as well as sign up for his Notes from the Universe at www.tut.com. You've been listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I hope you'll join me again at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.